Hello and welcome to the South Carolina Lead. You trust the lead to keep you up to date on important state news, and we've been doing that more often as our state faces the COVID-19 virus. I'm your host, Gavin Jackson, and this episode was recorded on August 10th, 2020 from my home studio here in Columbia. Just so you know, some of the information in this podcast may have changed by the time you've heard it. This podcast cuts through the noise and gives you South Carolina-specific COVID-19 news and stories. This episode features a look at recent polling on how Governor Henry McMaster is handling the crisis. Dr. Linda Bell says how she really feels about McMaster's staff. We listen to a detailed analysis on what is now forecasted to be an extremely active hurricane season. And we tell you how much more work you've been doing from home, and much more. Additionally, we want to hear your stories, so we set up a voicemail box to hear from you all about your daily life in these uncertain times. Leave us a 1 to 3 minute long voicemail at 803-563-7169. Include your name, where you're calling from, and what's going on in your world. Are you unemployed? Are you still working? What's it like where you work? Have you tested positive for COVID-19? What was your experience like? We're very interested, as are our listeners. So let us know at 803-563-7169. Now for the latest in South Carolina. Currently, the spread of COVID-19 is, say it with me, folks, you know it, I know it, ongoing, widespread, and not contained, according to Department of Health and Environmental Control officials. However, cases have been trending lower recently, though infection rates still remain high. There have been 1,966 deaths, and currently there are 100,431 cases being reported in all 46 counties as of August 10th at 4 p.m. Our current percent positive rate is 12.8%. When we look at hospital beds, 1,353 of those beds are occupied by patients who have either tested positive or are under investigation for COVID-19. 360 patients are in ICU beds, and 217 patients are currently on ventilators. And on August 10th, we saw 718 new cases in one day. That's the lowest daily case rate we've seen since June 16th. Nationwide, we have just surpassed 5 million cases, the most in the world, and more than 163,000 Americans have died. The state newspaper reported on August 8th that emails show state epidemiologist Dr. Linda Bell regretted not taking a stronger stance during press conferences with Governor Henry McMaster, in which she says his staff misled people into thinking she too supported the reopening of close contact services in May. In a June 21st email to two colleagues, Bell said, quote, "The governor's staff are also somewhat manipulative in the meetings that I've been allowed to attend prior to the press briefings. I will not stand next to the governor anymore without speaking to what the science tells us is the right thing to do, particularly as his staff intend to portray that as my complicity with his position," quote. The governor's spokesman, Brian Sims, told the state a week after the reopening press conference that Bell, standing alongside the governor, signaled her support. Sims added that, quote, "We have to remember that the governor's scope of responsibilities and considerations is vastly different from that of our public health experts, who rightly have a more narrow focus," quote. In a June 25th email, Bell pushed for, quote, "stronger statements from DHEC," quote, "to help reduce infection rates in South Carolina," saying, quote, "I don't want to continue to walk this fine line as more and more lives are at risk." Moving on, as for the governor's handling of the pandemic, well, South Carolinians aren't too impressed. A recent Quinnipiac poll found voters are evenly split on the way McMaster is handling the response to the coronavirus, with 46% approving and 46% disapproving. Republicans overwhelmingly approve at 73%, whereas only 37% of independents and 25% of Democrats approve. And that same Quinnipiac poll of 914 registered voters found respondents are deadlocked between Republican Senator Lindsey Graham and Democratic opponent Jamie Harrison, supporting both equally at 44%, and 9% said that they didn't know. Among independent voters, Harrison has 47%, which is a 10-point advantage over Graham. The poll has a margin of error of plus or minus 3.2 points and was conducted via landline and cell phone. Economic news. Have you been working from home during the pandemic? Do you feel like you've been working more from home than the office? Well, a working paper published August 3rd by the National Bureau of Economic Research found the average workday increased by 48.5 minutes when the stay-at-home orders and lockdowns occurred in 16 large metro areas in North America, Europe, and the Middle East. The number of meetings also increased by 13%. Everyone loves meetings. Just send an email. Now, this was all determined by anonymous aggregated meeting and email metadata from 3.1 million users. I will say, though, that the good thing about those meetings is that they were 20% shorter. Tell us what your work from home life has been like. 803-563-7169. Now we have a warning for you folks. National weather forecasters have updated their hurricane outlook to an extremely active season and said up to 25 named storms could form in the Atlantic, which is a record high forecast, never done before. Now, of those storms, 7 to 11 could become hurricanes, and 3 to 6 could become major hurricanes. We've already seen 9 named storms so far this year, 5 of which have made landfall. And since it's 2020 and everything's happening, we just had an earthquake, we've had twisters, already had a hurricane. I mean, like, come on, guys, listen, please. We're going to have some, folks. I'm telling you right now. And listen to Dr. Jerry Bell. He's NOAA's lead hurricane season forecaster. Last week, he said that multiple factors have led to this increase. Also, just so you know, this was recorded from a conference call, so apologies in advance to the quality, but the insight here is incredibly valuable.
First and foremost, oceanic and atmospheric conditions are now even more hospitable for hurricane formation and intensification. These conditions are predicted to continue for the next several months. Also, weather and climate models are all now indicating an even higher potential for an extremely active season. And finally, due to the record early season activity, the predicted number of named storms for the entire season is now much higher than the 13 to 19 storms we had predicted in May. The oceanic and atmospheric conditions that now favor an even stronger hurricane season include ongoing warmer-than-average sea surface temperatures in the tropical Atlantic Ocean and Caribbean Sea, and an enhanced West African monsoon. Accompanying these conditions are reduced vertical wind shear, weaker Atlantic trade winds, lower air pressure, and wind patterns coming off of Africa that more easily spin up storms. These conditions are all typical of an above-normal and extremely active season. A main climate factor behind these conditions is the ongoing warm phase of what's called the Atlantic Multidecadal Oscillation, or AMO. This pattern reappeared in 1995 and has been producing more active hurricane seasons since that time. Another climate factor this year is the potential development of La Nina. Already we're seeing some La Nina-like atmospheric conditions. La Nina reflects cooler than average sea surface temperatures in the equatorial region of the eastern Pacific Ocean. La Nina is important for hurricanes because it acts to weaken the wind shear over the Caribbean Sea and tropical Atlantic Ocean, thereby favoring more and stronger Atlantic storms.
Bell also said that 70% of the seasons since 1995, when this active era began, have been above normal, and 9 of the seasons have been extremely active. But what about global warming's role in all this? Bell explains.
Another very important issue related to hurricanes and global warming is hurricane impacts, and especially rising ocean temperatures. Warmer ocean temperatures mean higher ocean levels. This translates into more extensive ocean inundation and bigger storm surges when hurricanes approach. And this issue becomes even more critical because so many more millions of people are now living along the coast of Gulf Coast, the entire Atlantic coast, which means that millions of people are often potentially impacted every time a hurricane threatens. So there's things we can do now with the warming sea levels to help mitigate our risk, and that the biggest thing to do is make sure you're prepared now. There's been a few studies that suggest that global warming could be increasing rainfall in these biggest storms by a few percent. So that would mean like Hurricane Harvey that hit Texas a few years ago and produced like 50 inches of rain or so, maybe a couple inches, studies are showing, could be attributed to global warming. There's another potential impact that recent studies are indicating is that it could be leading globally to more of the strongest storms, the categories 4 and 5 major hurricanes. But that study also is careful to point out that for the Atlantic, because these other climate factors so dominate the historical record, that the global warming signal could just be smeared out still by these factors.
Now, there have been a lot of comparisons to the 2005 season when we saw Hurricane Katrina, but forecasters say 2020 is not exactly the same. By this time in 2005, for example, there had already been two major hurricanes. Atlantic water temperatures were warmer, and wind conditions were more favorable. But what has changed since 2005 is that forecasters can be even more sure of their outlook thanks to the addition of climate modeling instead of just statistical tools to help with their forecast. Now, this storm outlook should be your wake-up call to get your plans in order. Buy your plywood if you need to. Buy your case or two of water and other food and supplies just to keep ready. This will save you time and energy when the storms do get close and supplies run out. Now, also, don't let disaster fatigue get to you or think that things aren't going to be a threat. It only takes one storm. So again, as many as 25 named storms this season, 3 to 6 of which could become major storms. This comes all with a 70% likelihood of occurrence. Hurricane season goes through November 30th and peaks in mid-September, which is right around the time I'm going to the Outer Banks with my family. At the top of the episode, I mentioned the grim milestones we've reached as a country and a state during this pandemic. DHEC Dr. Brandon Traxler was on a conference call Friday with reporters to provide an update on the agency's response. She said local mask mandates now cover more than 2 million South Carolinians and are making a difference. DHEC will be sharing data this week on mask ordinances and how they affect case numbers. Here's Dr. Traxler.
So when we look at the numbers that are trending down, we are seeing that effect in both the last couple of weeks worth of case counts, but also looking at the last few weeks worth of percent positives. And so I think the biggest contributing factor likely is people, you know, doing this social distancing and wearing the mask. That really is our biggest tool that we have to fight this virus. And so I think it's the people, you know, banding together and doing this is starting to show a good effect.
The month of July accounted for 56% of the cases in the state up until that point. Dr. Traxler said numbers were high for several reasons.
We had, you know, a significant proportion of our deaths occur in July. We also know that in towards late June and early July and into really the middle of July, we were seeing some of our highest case counts that we have had during this entire pandemic. We also know that deaths, unfortunately, when they occur, lag, you know, up to a couple to several weeks behind the case counts. So you expect to see that rise, you know, a few weeks potentially delayed behind cases. And so I think that the month of July's deaths are reflecting the case counts we were seeing a couple to a few weeks earlier.
Traxler addressed how DHEC is providing guidance on school reopenings as well.
The incidence rate is one of those metrics or indicators that talk about disease activity. We have been putting out information about recent disease activity at the county level that takes three different indicators or metrics into consideration. The incidence rate within the last couple weeks, the trend in the incidence rate, and then the percent positive rate in the last couple of weeks. That is not meant to be a standalone factor, however, in making decisions regarding schools or other entities. We recognize that there may be other factors that just local decision makers are having to take into consideration. We provide this information, though, at the CDC's recommendation to make it available for those leaders to make the best informed decisions. There is no threshold that we want to see in particular, other than we want to see cases decreasing for schools, for our lifestyles, for the business recovery. And for most of all, people's health and well-being. We want to see those cases going all the way down, hopefully eventually to zero.
And just along with that, Accelerate ED, which is the education task force looking at the pandemic and school reopenings, gave recommendations that if there is high spread of COVID-19 in the area and the school, that districts should rely on a full distance learning schedule until the health situation permits a return to in-person instruction for all or part of the students in a school. As of August 3rd, all counties had high disease activity, including incidence rates and percent positive rates, while trended incidence rates varied from low to high. And I'll be chatting with Dr. Brandon Traxler on This Week in South Carolina on Friday evening on SCE TV at 7:30 p.m. Email me any questions you may have about COVID-19 and the state's response to me directly at gjackson@scetv.org. You can also send me a direct message on Twitter at my account at Gavin Jackson. Now, this is our wind down section where we want to hear from you. Tell us what's going on in your world. Are you on the front lines of this pandemic? Have you been directly affected by COVID-19? Tell us what's happening. We want to know how you're going to handle schools this fall. Very interested. 803-563-7169. You might get on the pod. Just be sure you leave us your name, where you're calling from, and what's going on within 1 to 3 minutes. And AT, do we have any new voicemails?
We absolutely do. Ooh. It is a returning caller. Ooh. He's calling back for the first time in a few months. So
love to hear it.
Let's see. Let's see where he's at. Let's roll the dang tape.
I like a good follow-up. Roll the tape.
Hey, Gavin, AT, it's Levi again on Jones Island. We talked, I think, back in April, and since then, we've just been kind of rolling on, been home with the kids, piecing in work when I can. If you remember, my wife's a nurse practitioner. She actually contracted COVID and was COVID positive and was down and out for quite a bit. But she's back at it now, back at work. It was rough at first, but then mild symptoms are still persisting. And my kids and I, we never got it. 5-year-old twins, and we're just kind of chugging along, waiting for the fall and trying to figure out what's going to happen with work and school. So 2020 marches on, and all my sports teams are really sucking right now. So 2020 is still rearing its ugly head, and only August. All right, guys. Thanks a bunch. Peace.
Levi, thanks again for calling back. We love to hear follow-ups from people, and sad to hear about your wife, but glad that she's mostly recovered. That's a lot, especially when you have 5-year-old twins.
Yay.
But 2020 does indeed march on.
Ugh. Yeah, I'm sorry about your teams, too. I mean, my Sixers are not looking good, Levi. It's bad, and the Phillies aren't good either, and they won't pay JT Realmuto. And Joel Embiid hurt his ankle, and Ben Simmons is
already
out.
Save this for Philly Talk Radio. No one cares.
The sky is falling. But moving on to the hard-hitting reporting that you come to know and love from us here at The Lead. I'm going to take Gavin Jackson off the record here, okay? Or on the record. I don't know. But we were talking the other day, and Gavin confessed to me.
It wasn't so much as a confession as an admission.
This is a huge confession. He bared his soul. He told me that he had never seen Terminator 2. I paused there because I was going to put gasps. And I think that as children of the 80s, you're telling me you never in 1998 turned on TBS and
TBS,
they were just
that
playing
would infer T2? That we had cable as children. We didn't have cable as children.
How do you not see? It was a cultural moment, Terminator
2. I don't know. It just never got around to us.
Either way.
I don't think we all watched. I don't think any of my brothers watched it. I mean, we'll watch everything else.
Come on, man. Terminator 2 was everything for a second. Okay. But anyway.
Oh, my God. I can't believe I made it this far in life without watching Terminator. Oh, my God. Thank God I can finally breathe because I watched them both last night.
You watched them both last night. Okay. Let's get to the bottom of this. Which is the better Terminator?
I mean, I know everyone says the second one's like, it's like one of the best sequels ever made. And I think it really did hold up very well. But I mean, the first one, I always like, you know, everyone, you can't have the second without the first one. Now that could also mean that like, well, that doesn't mean everyone, the first of everything's the best of everything. But I mean, I like the first one the most.
I like the second one the most, but I like, how cool is it when he's driving in the like LA River with the shotgun and he's flipping it around shooting.
Yeah, that was quality.
The
that shotgun.
T-1000 driving the big rig behind him.
Yeah, I love all of there's so much big rig action. Like those things were indestructible.
Yeah, that is
it was great. I mean, that's the thing too with the second one. It was just like so I mean, the plot line was good, but that T-1000 just indestructible.
Scary. Scary.
But we were talking about James Cameron cuz quality director. Always has been, and then just
he's a great follow-up director.
Well, and then you started seeing some people that were also going to be in Aliens, or I guess were in Aliens, or I can't remember
There's
which one came out
crossover.
When. But yeah, he had his little cast there. A lot of similarities in the plot. trajectory, you could say.
Mm-hmm.
You know, someone jumping into or being pushed into a molten pit. Reminded me a little about Aliens 3. Aliens 3.
It's so, Alien 3.
Yeah, I mean, there's some overlays there. And then you had your strong female lead, which is always good to see. So, I mean, it was a lot there.
Both T1 and Alien, the first one,
mm-hmm.
it's both about, like, feeling the horror of, like, Ripley and Sarah Connor. You know what I mean? You're inside their horror. Mm-hmm. And then both second ones are, like, F1 race car versions of this, where it's good. Like, it starts and it's 1,000 miles an hour.
Well, and, like, the, you know, it's just such better quality in the second one, too. You're going to get that with, you know, advances
CGI,
and special effects and all that stuff, which was, I mean, that still holds up in my opinion. I mean, because it didn't look that trashy, you know, like it really
when
looks
he
good.
He cuts his arm open to reveal he's a Terminator to the Cyberdyne guy. Come on, that's cool.
And
that's
then all
cool.
the just what they did with the T-1000. I mean, it always looked really flawless and really well done. So.
Have you seen this boy?
that was my only experience with Terminator was from Wayne's World.
Wayne's World.
That's all I could keep thinking about. But
you're waiting for it the whole time.
Yeah, I had to watch it. So I watched it last night, this morning, I should say. Watch the first one. It's on Prime. Check it out if you haven't seen it, and you can talk about it. And then second one couldn't find, so I had to rent it from Amazon. Again, going back to Fifth Element,
fine,
rent that for $1. But I had to rent this one for $4, or I could have bought the DVD for $5. I needed to do it before I had this conversation, so I just rented it, sat on my couch,
now,
watched it.
Now, I will tell you that this is the first step towards me getting you to watch Hobbs and Shaw.
Yes.
You will view this movie.
At some point... in the distant future, perhaps.
Wrong. No. I put it like 6 days tops until I
Meg's
bag
gonna
you
watch it. She told me this week
it.
And she's gonna watch it and she's gonna call in. So if Meg gives it a good review, I will then watch it.
Meg, I'm telling you now, you have to suspend your belief.
I think she's going to. Sounds outrageous.
But I'm telling you, there's no way for me to properly tell you how over the top this movie is. Hobbs and Shaw. It's crazy. You'll like the movie. I promise you, you'll like it.
Okay.
I don't know who wouldn't like it. But anyway, we have one more thing that we need to touch on, right? You have something about Facebook nudity and plants.
So
right?
I have this one Facebook plant hobbyist group that I started following. I've had plants, let's go on the record, before this pandemic started, you know, like I told you way back.
Incredibly
when
wholesome. Very
longest
wholesome
relationship
brag
I've ever had was with my one, I think it's a pothos plant that I've had since college. So.
Doesn't
been
even
there,
know
done
his
that,
name.
Folks. I know all my plans, but what I was saying is that I've been on Facebook here and there, and this plant Facebook group, I guess it was a big body positivity movement this weekend or something, because there was a lot of body positivity. It was really great to see these people having these great emotions and these great reactions, a lot of thousands of likes on some photos, but it's a lot of people posing naked with their plants. And you know, they're just well positioned enough to make it look that you can't see anything. But
that
I'm just
it, that
like
it, that it passes guidelines.
So you're just scrolling. You see like all these random people with plants. I'm like, okay, we've reached a peak, folks. Like, and I mean, like I said, I have plenty of plants, but I'm not on the point where I'm going to be posing nude with my plants. I'm not there.
But
I don't
like,
know if I'm ever going to be there.
You're scrolling. Here I am, Gavin, scrolling. Looking for sod recommendations. And you're seeing not sod.
You know, just
a lot of naughty stuff.
Well positioned snake plants or you know,
very generous snake plants.
Yes. But I did go to Lowe's this week and I bought another plant and then I repotted some, so you know, because they grow so much you can just repot them and split them and divide them, so you really don't need to buy that many. I have some if people
you're
want
only
some.
Supposed to talk to plants, right? You don't have to get naked with them.
Yeah, you don't have to, but if you have, let us know. But it was funny because we did a family Zoom call on Sunday night. My dad's like extended family. It's great to see everyone, but you know, my one brother had his kids, my two of my cousins had their kids, everyone else had dogs, and I don't have either of those. And
you have nothing.
My brother Nick, who is just a smart aleck, will say, he's like, Gavin, why don't you show everyone your plants? He's like, why don't you show them your plants? And I was just like, all right, I actually have one right next to me. You know, as a companion.
The feng shui is right in your house, always. So there's a plant.
Great air.
Nearby.
Great air quality, always. So let us know about your plants, your dogs, your Zoom calls, Terminator, 80s movies, etc. We have plenty to talk about. Hopefully we got your interest peaked a little bit there. 803-563-7169. And thanks again for listening to the pod, y'all. Show us your appreciation by leaving us a voicemail at 803-563-7169 or a review on iTunes. And stay up to date with the latest news on SCETV.org and SouthCarolinaPublicRadio.org. And don't forget to support your local newspapers. A lot going on in the media landscape here in South Carolina. Also, consider becoming an ETV member. Membership starts at just $40, and if you pledge at the $75 level, you get access to PBS Passport and all the great programming your donation helps support. For the South Carolina Lead, I'm Gavin Jackson. Be well, South Carolina.
I'm a cheeky baby.
You trying to get me to say that so I put that at the end?
No, I'll put it down there.
I'll do it.
I'll put
Watch
mine
me
back there. I don't care.